Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. Here we are again, Deserted Island Dis, live on a Wednesday night in the Sheffield Live studios. Another warm night, not as hot as last week, but we're still hot here in the Sheffield Live studios for Deserted Island Dis. So tonight I've got another Irish man. We ran out of a few, but we've had 2 weeks in a row now, an Irish man and another Irish man from the north. We've got Martin McCurvey with me tonight. Hi, Martin. How are you doing?
Hi, Ben. How are you? Great to be with you.
Thanks, Martin. No, I'm really pleased you've done the show. I asked you, it's probably about 6 months ago, wasn't it, when I first asked you, and you've made excuse after excuse.
Here I am tonight. I've
finally got you. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, it's the show Deserted Island Dis, where we find people who were born on the island of Ireland and now living in South Yorkshire. And we talk about their life and we punctuate the show with music choices of the guests. So I'm so pleased Martin's here with me. So we're going to talk about Martin's life. He was born in Fermanagh in 1962, but he's been in Sheffield since 1980 and he's done so much for Sheffield. And he worked his way up to the top of the legal career. He was a partner in a really big law firm. And then he retired and it seems like his life's even busier. He's done loads and loads of stuff. He's been a high sheriff, amongst other things. He's still working hard for the community of Sheffield. So that's the calibre of man we're talking about here with me tonight. So we'll start at the beginning now, Martin. And tell us about your kind of earliest memories and what life was like growing up in the north of Ireland.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Great to be with you and good to be with your listeners also. Born in August 1962, grew up in a small village called Ederney in County Fermanagh, population of about 600-700 people.
Small
rural community.
Yeah.
Had a very great childhood, went to the local school.
What was the mix like in terms of Protestant Catholic in that?
Yeah,
we were
a mixed community, but we got on very well together. And that might seem a strange thing to say given the 60s, 70s and the troubles in the north, but we were a very happy community. We were mixed. I went to a mixed primary school.
Really, yeah. I've had quite a lot of guests on who were from the north of Ireland and a few from Fermanagh as well. But I think they all went to kind of segregated schools.
Yeah.
I suppose to start with, you didn't know any difference. That was life. Yeah.
We were probably the exception in our community. And I think, you know, my mother and father made a decision to send myself, my brother and my two sisters to a mixed school. And I think it was a really good thing to happen, actually, because we got to meet people from, as we say, the other part of the divide in the north of Ireland.
Yeah.
And that was really helpful growing up. You know.
And where are you in the siblings? Are you?
I'm the eldest.
The eldest.
Eldest of four.
I was going to guess that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went through first, and then your other siblings. What is the much age gap? Or?
Yeah, my sister Mary is 2 years younger than me, and then my sister Anne is 5 years younger than me, and then my brother, who's the baby in the family, is about 9 years younger than me.
Right, right.
So I'm the one who was trying to set the example.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me.
I'm the one who got away. The rest stayed at home.
Yeah, all right. Oh, so they're still back in.
Everybody's back home in Ederney. Yeah. I'm here.
So why is it Ederney? Am I saying it right?
Ederney. Yeah.
How come you were there? Is like a generational thing? Was your mum?
Small village, as I said, really dominated probably by two families. My father's family, the McCurveys, and then my mother's family, who are the Maguires.
Okay.
So I think if you take the Maguires and the McCurvey out of Ederney, there's probably not an awful lot left in it.
Okay. So those two families have been there for generations.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where my mother and father grew up and met each other. Wonderful.
And what did they do for...
father was... I can remember growing up, my father worked with his brother in a men's clothes shop in Enniskillen, which was about 16 miles away.
Yeah.
And then my father became a baker. And my father was a bit of an entrepreneur, actually, without really recognizing it at that time. He was always turning his hand to things. And, you know, as the clothes business became difficult, he kind of adopted to become a baker. And I remember, you know, the bakery starting up in literally the kitchen at home.
Okay.
And it developed into a bakery business with a van, and he employed people.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a great source of employment for people in the town.
Yeah.
And my mother...
That's a brave thing to do, isn't it? So you're just baking bread?
Just bread, scones, cakes, whatever, and selling to local shops.
Yeah.
And then my brother got involved in that, and he worked hard at taking that on and building it. And then I suppose with the onset of things changing in the north of Ireland, we got things like Tesco coming to the locality.
Yeah.
These big supermarkets arrived, so they made the support of local corner shops quite difficult.
Yeah.
And it was at that point that the bakery kind of reached an end, I suppose, to some extent. And then my father retired, and you know, sadly he left us in 2015.
Oh,
but lots of good memories, and you know, lots of, just thinking tonight about it, all the things he did to support us, and you know, my mother being at home bringing us up.
Yeah.
So I had a very, very lucky childhood.
Yeah,
very,
and your mum's still alive.
My mother's amazing. She's 91.
Yeah,
she's still living. I get to go back to Edirne as much as I can to visit her. And that's something that's really important to me.
Great. Yeah. Well, I think we can do one of your first song choices, if that's all, because that's kind of, you said, reminds you of that time a little bit.
It does, yeah. It reminds me of being back home.
So you've picked Home to Donegal. So Donegal's obviously the next county along.
Donegal's a neighbouring county, a place we would have went to many happy days during holidays, to Rosnaula or Bundoran. And a county I've got a lot of affinity with. Yeah.
Okay, let's play that then. So Home to Donegal.
Thanks, Ben.
Oh, the lights of London are far behind the thoughts of homeland, a crowd in my mind, in familiar place. Come into view, I see my home now, soon I'll see you. We'll talk to the old folk, how they're getting on, treat them to late nights, sing a few songs. We'll talk of the neighbors and the life in the town. There's so much to tell them, the days fly around. 'Cause this is my homeland, the place I was born. Take a walk down to St. Mary's, to that sheltered spot. I will kneel and pray there for the ones that have gone, and hope that they're proud of the wandering sun. No matter where I
I'm going to ask you to do is a little favour. If you have a mobile phone down there, we'd love you to get it out of your pockets and turn the lights on. We want to see all those mobiles with the lights lighting up the marquee in Cork tonight. Come on. Oh, that's the job. That's it. If you know, let's hear you sing.
This is my homeland, the place I was born in. No matter where I roam, it's in my soul. It's my favorite wonder, a thousand places. Yes, my heart will lead me back home to my Donegal.
Home to Donegal, that's Nathan Carter's version, which probably not the one you were listening to as a child back in Fermanagh.
Not too bad. Do for me.
No, it was great. It was nice to hear a live version. I like live versions of songs. We've got some more coming up, I think. But yeah, so my guest tonight, Martin McCurvey, born in Fermanagh, 1962. We've just still talking about those days, really. So your primary school was the same as a mixed primary school with Catholic and Protestants. Yeah. So how did the school do that then? Did he do any religion? Like, did you like in assemblies and stuff? How did he kind of manage that?
I think what I took from my primary school days is that we just learned how to respect each other's religions.
Yeah.
And it was done in a very even-handed way. And I think once we, you know, built relationships together, we kind of respected each other and got on together.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no doubt it was a strange time. It was a time of great uncertainty, a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But I felt very, very lucky looking back to think that my parents made the decision to send us to a mixed school. It was something that was hugely important. Yeah. Absolutely.
So did you do Gaelic sports at that primary school, or...?
We played football.
We played sports.
We were happy kids growing up. It was quite a normal growing up phase of life, really.
Yeah,
doing all the things that were enjoyable.
And then you were telling me that your life changed quite fundamentally, I suppose, when you got to 11. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at 11, I failed the 11 plus, so I couldn't go to the grammar school that was local to us.
That surprised me immensely that you failed the 11 plus, just kind of, well, knowing you a little bit, but also kind of seeing your career afterwards. Yeah. Was it a surprise to you?
I was disappointed, if I'm being honest. I actually probably shed a tear whenever I got the results that I'd failed it.
Yeah.
But listen, I think looking back, great lesson in life of how you embrace what you might think is failure at the time and how you use it as an opportunity to turn your life and do something different. And my life fundamentally changed then because my parents decided to send me to St. Patrick's College in Armagh,
right,
which was about 85 miles from Edirne.
Okay.
So I had to go there as a boarder.
So this is the age 11?
Yeah. I left home at 11, went to school in Armagh, got home maybe once every month. Absolutely hated it to start with.
I can imagine, yeah.
Really wanted my parents to take me out of it.
Yeah.
But thankfully I stuck at it. And really, that was the making of me in terms of, you know, doing exams, working hard at school. I built great friendships there, great people to get to meet and to grow up with. And really, you know, I wanted to be a lawyer from the age of about 8, and I think Armagh was the first building block in enabling me to realise that ambition.
So let's talk about that. Where did that come from, do you think, wanting to be a lawyer at 8?
I don't know, Ben. It sounds really strange to say it, but I'll share it with you. I just wanted to be a lawyer from a very young age, and I was hell-bent on making sure I was going to be one.
And but how did you know what a lawyer was?
I might have watched something like Crown Court on TV or Crown something. Court,
yeah.
And thought, wow, that looks really interesting.
yeah.
Without really recognizing what being a lawyer might be or what it might mean for me. But I just, that's what I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Armagh was a, St. Patrick's College was a huge grounding building block
academic,
enabling that to happen,
Well, so when you kind of failed 11 plus, did you recognise that was a bit of a stumbling block to be towards becoming a lawyer? Or did
I think it was only a stumbling block from the point of view I couldn't get to the local grammar school.
Yeah.
But my parents, and I thank them both for it immensely, made the decision to send me to St. Patrick's College, which gave me the equal opportunity to, you know, to further my education, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so...
No, that's good. And did that, I suppose that... I mean, it's loads of people say they want to do stuff at 8, don't they?
Yeah.
Like being an astronaut and things
like
that.
Yeah. Live your dreams.
Yeah.
Dream big. Yeah.
Well, you've done it. Yeah. But did you were you telling your parents at that point, do you think? Or,
I mean, I was actually quite open with people about what I wanted to be. I think some of my fellow students of school thought I was probably pretty boring.
Yeah.
But I was pretty clear that's what I wanted to be. And, I kind of applied myself accordingly. And, and I suppose to some extent what I did do, and I reflect on this quite a lot, without really thinking about it, I grasped the opportunity my parents had given to me. And I only really appreciated that in later life.
Yeah.
You know, that they could have easily made the decision not to send me there and my career would have been totally different.
And just to be clear, they didn't pay. It was
public, non-paying school.
Yeah.
Taught by priests.
Must be any entry process, don't you know? I mean, you wouldn't be involved in that, would you? But I mean,
you had to do an entrance exam, which I think from recollection must have been not too difficult because I passed it, It must have been okay.
So a massive change in your life then. So
7 years there.
Yeah,
so 74 until 1980. Yeah.
But I suppose any transition to that secondary school is difficult, isn't it? I mean, in my own life, you've just gone from that small primary school to a secondary school.
Exactly.
And if you'd have gone to the grammar school down the road, you'd have had some transition. But the fact that you've not got your parents there and you've not got your mates from home.
You kind of learn how to grow up pretty quickly.
Yeah. And then probably like by, second year, third year, you settled in and loving it.
Second, third year, settled in, but I'd gone from not liking it to thinking, do you know what, I've got to make a go of this. Did my, what were at that point in time, O-levels, and then did A-levels, and, got the opportunity then in 1980 to come to Sheffield University.
Oh, we're jumping ahead. Hold on.
Yeah.
We'll have to play a song. So we've got the Boys of the County Armagh Boys from the County Armagh next. Should we play that one and just say, I mean, is it obvious why we picked this one? Or?
Nice memories for me in terms of my school, going to the college, and just thinking actually 2 weeks ago, one of my closest friends passed away from Armagh. So I think of Mark tonight and all the friendships I had with him. He sadly died a couple of weeks ago, and I think of him tonight whenever I think of this song.
Okay, let's play that then. The Boys from the County Armagh.
There's one fair county in Ireland with memories so glorious and grand, where nature has lavished her bounty. It's the orchard of Erin's green land. I love its cathedral city, once founded by Patrick so true. And there in the heart of its bosom lie the ashes of Brian Boru. It's my own Irish home, far across the foam. And though I've often left it in foreign lands to roam, no matter where I wander, through cities near or far, sure my heart it's at home in old Ireland, in the county of Armagh. I've travelled a part of that county
through Newtown, Fork Hill, across Midlen, and down by the gap of Mount Norris, and home by Blackwater again, where the girls are so gay and so hearty, none fairer in Erin go bra. Ah, but where are the boys that can court them, like the boys from the County Armagh? It's my own Irish home, far across the foam, and though I've often left it in foreign lands to roam, no matter where I wander, through cities near or far, sure my heart is at home in old Ireland, in the County of Armagh. Sure my heart is at home in old Ireland, in the County of Armagh.
The Boys from the County Armagh. I love that song. It's a great song, isn't it? Great. Thanks for picking that. So my guest, Martin, that's his second song choice of the evening. We better skip through, Martin. We were chatting away. It's lovely. Yep. So we're talking about your life and talked about your school days. And generally, it was pretty happy, yeah. I suppose what we've not talked about in this period is the troubles and what was going on there. What was your experience of it, or encounters with it? I mean, Armagh was a lot going on in Armagh, wasn't it?
Yeah, Armagh was I suppose we'd describe it as a pretty hot place in terms of the troubles and some of the things that were going on in the north of Ireland in the 70s and 80s. But, you know, my experience of it was my school days there were happy, met a lot of good people, grew up with a lot of people, friendships that I've still kept to this day.
I mean, this was totally Catholic. The secondary school was just Catholic.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. It was a Catholic school. But I also, the troubles were always there. You were always cognizant of it. But, you know, I always reflect on the fact of how I was brought up.
Yeah.
Going back to the days of going to a mixed primary school. Was very lucky in many ways to come from a community that kind of got on with life despite all that was going on around us.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a difficult time in the north of Ireland, and there were, you know, lots of very sad things happening.
Yeah. But you personally, I suppose, what was it like, even like travelling, was that, so going back to Fermanagh and Armagh, did you have like roadblocks and stuff?
Yeah, you had roadblocks and you had security checks, you know, big security checks at airports, a lot of roadblocks, a lot of police checks. Some ways you kind of became almost used to it.
Yeah.
And you got on with life. And I now sometimes, you know, thinking of my two daughters, and I try to explain to them what it was like going back to Edinburgh in the early 80s, 90s. And they, of course, now have no experience of that because the world has totally changed.
So how old are your daughters for the audience?
My daughters are 27 and 25.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Good Friday Agreement was...
Oh, yeah, changed everything.
So 98, was it? No? Yeah. Yeah, so in 98...
Changed everything.
So your daughters wouldn't... Yeah.
You know, they have no recollection of... And in some ways I'm happy about that because the Good Friday Agreement was a really good thing to happen, and, you know, we've got peace on the island of Ireland now, and that's something that I think... Certainly many people of my age would have thought we would never see in our lifetime, and now it's been reached. We live in happier times, and that's something that, you know, is to be really, really, we're very grateful for that.
Definitely. Yeah. So you did okay then, obviously. You stayed there till you were 18, did A-levels.
Yeah.
And in law?
Yeah, did my A-levels there, and that took me to 1980, and... it was at that point that I decided to come to Sheffield University.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's... We are. Let's get your song choice in quick, because I think that's relating to that time, wasn't it? So you picked... The Boys Are Back in Town.
Yeah.
Tin Lizzie, why have you picked this one?
Well, that kind of reminds me of growing up and, you know, that era of Phil Lynott and Thin Lizzy and that rock and roll era and...
So did you be playing this at St. Patrick's
Yeah, and
College?
I remember going to see Thin Lizzy at places like Slane Castle and... Different places in Ireland for, you know, live bands. So they were a big part of the music scene growing up, yeah.
So going to Slane, would you go like with a group of mates?
We'd always go as a group, yeah.
So it's, I mean, it's, that's just near Dublin, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember going to Slane to watch U2. I saw U2's first live gig at Slane. And this is at a time whenever nobody knew really who U2 were.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to say, yeah.
And they were playing backup to Thin Lizzy at that concert.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's quite interesting how they progressed.
Yeah, well, they're both amazing, massive bands from Ireland. Yeah. So the boys are back in town, Thin Lizzy. And back in town, Thin Lizzy. That's the choice of Martin McCurvey, who's my guest tonight on Deserted Island Disc. It's the show where we get people born in the island of Ireland, now living in South Yorkshire. And Martin definitely meets that criteria. We're just getting him to Sheffield now. It's the point, halfway through the show, we should get you to Sheffield. So go on, tell us about, well, you came to uni in Sheffield, presumably.
I came to university in 1980.
Why Sheffield?
Why Sheffield? That's a really good question. It's about as logical as this. I was sitting in class one day and the teacher said to me, "What universities are you going to apply to?"
Yeah.
And I said, "I don't know." And one of my friends in class said, "I've just been to Sheffield."
Right.
And I said, "Why were you in Sheffield?" And he said, "I want to do dentistry and I'm had been over for an interview at the Charles Clifford Dental School.
Yeah.
And he said Sheffield looked really cool. So I put Sheffield down and the rest is history.
There you go. Here I am. Was it what, as your first choice?
Yeah, first choice.
And so you were in the law school in Uni of Sheffield?
Came to university in 1980, did a three-year law degree.
So you must have got good grades at A-levels then, yeah, you did.
Yeah, I got the grades to get in, yeah, which was good. So Armagh did a lot for me in that regard, you know. It kind of got me three good A-levels, so I still wanted to be a lawyer at that stage, so that was, you know, the next step on the way.
And did you, was it, when you started, was that your first time here? Did you come to an open day or anything? Or?
No, I'd never been in England in my life before. Yeah. And I remember the day I arrived at Sheffield Station with my two suitcases, trying to work out how do I get to Broomhill.
Because I was Did you fly to Manchester?
Yeah, I flew to Manchester, then straight across.
On your own, obviously.
Yeah.
Parents didn't come. Like these days, parents have to drop them off, don't they? And,
I think I have a recollection of my father and I probably coming the first time together. But then whenever I came to stay, I came on my own.
Yeah. So he did. He did see you. Said goodbye to his
firstborn.
And
indeed, my parents visited many times. A lot of good memories of Sheffield. And, you know, they got an opportunity to come here many times to visit, which I think they always enjoyed.
Yeah. And so then you go on out, talk us through your university life. So,
wonderful. Three good years. Loved Sheffield. Loved the whole experience of living here, just the people, how friendly they were. Took a bit of time to get used to the accent, I think.
For everyone else.
Cheap bus fares, 2p bus fares. But lovely experience. And, you know, I'm here still in Sheffield. Why? Because I had a wonderful student experience here. And it kind of was a place that I thought, you know, I could make my life here. And
I mean, it's pretty common for Sheffield, isn't it, that people stay on. So it's kind of one of the highest retention rates.
I think there's a lot of high retention rates.
People stay around.
And I can understand why.
We've got two great universities.
Yeah, it's a nice place.
Yeah. Were you still going off seeing bands? Were you still, were you focused on your studies? Or you were half and half?
No, I think I'd have worked hard at my studies, but I would also have had, you know, enjoyed life, did things that you do as a student.
Calls down West Street.
We used to have, West Street and, you know, the Grapes, Dog and Partridge. Fagans,
Was you getting involved with the Irish community then?
I would have done, but I think it's probably fair to say in my early days in Sheffield, I suppose maybe it's because I was a student, I never really felt that I understood the Irish community in Sheffield.
Yeah.
So I went to Manchester quite a lot at weekends.
Okay.
To visit friends who I'd been to school with who had gone to Manchester. And I suppose Manchester was a bit of a lure because there was a big Irish community there.
There's a bigger community and there's a bit of a hub and place. There's a lot more kind of Irish centres and community centres.
Exactly, which Sheffield didn't have in the early 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
It was all good experience. Yeah. Really enjoyed it, you know.
But so it's good you found, I suppose in the Dog and Partridge back then, there'd be still remnants of the Irish music and people playing
stuff.
A lot
of folk music, traditional music. Always made very welcome there. It was, in many ways, it resembled a community in itself, really.
Yeah.
You could go in there and not know anybody, but you'd soon find yourself speaking to somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
And do you go up that neck of the woods now?
I still go now and again. I probably don't go as often as I used to, but that's just probably, I suppose as I get older, I might get wiser. Yeah. I don't know. You know.
But you were saying you're aware of the Gaelic football team now in Sheffield, and you've put some money into that. You're saying,
St Vincent's wonderful and great to see all the lads there who have done so much work to bring that together as a community. Not just in terms of Gaelic football, but actually just bringing people together.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I think is tremendous. And you know, a big call out to Michael and all the guys there who just make that the community it is. And I think it's, I can measure it like this. We didn't have that in Sheffield whenever I came here as a student. And I can see the benefit that now brings to people here, which is just tremendous.
Well, that's it. Well, it's been a benefit to me because I've had about five of the team on the show.
There you go. Yeah, wonderful.
And Michael has promised to come on a show. But he's too busy, so...
Well, I think if Michael's listening, I would say, Michael, get on this show.
he's, apparently has, because he's involved now with the kind of Leeds and Yorkshire wide.
He is, absolutely.
He has the fifth Wednesday of the month off.
Yeah, he puts in so much effort. He does amazing work. Fantastic. Yeah.
But back to you. So we probably, let's get another song in. So I've got next on my list, Ollie Ullman's Heart, but yeah. I think your reasoning for this is lovely, and we can spend a bit of time saying why you picked this song.
Yeah, I've picked this song because I've just always loved this song from the first time I probably heard it, but it also reminds me, I think, of all the blessings I've got with all the lovely women that I have in my life, my mother, my two sisters, I think of my wife, Juliet, who's from Sheffield, my daughters, Bronte and Freya, my sister-in-law, Brigine. I just feel really blessed with all the women I've had in my life, and this song makes me kind of think about that, so...
Let's play. That's a lovely
hope
sentiment.
Hope everybody likes it.
A lovely sentiment.
My heart is low. My heart is so low. As only a woman's heart can be. As only a woman's, as only a woman's heart can know. The tears that drip from my bewildered eyes taste of bittersweet romance. Still in my hopes, you're still on my mind, oh. And even though I manage on my own, my heart is low, my heart is so low, as only a woman's heart can be. As only woman's, as only a woman's, as only a woman's heart can know. Restless eyes reveal my troubled soul, and memories flood my weary heart. I mourn for my dreams, I mourn for my wasted love, and while I know that I'll survive alone. My heart is low, my heart is so low, as only a woman's heart can be. As only woman, as only a woman, as only a woman's heart can know. My heart is low,
yes, my heart is so low,
as only a woman's heart can be.
Beautiful, lovely Mary Black and Eleanor McAvoy there as well. So that's Only a Woman's Heart, and that's a lovely choice of Martin, who's my guest tonight here on Deserted Island Day. So Martin, for all the women in your life, so you feel like blessed that women have been in your life? Because I mean, I've known you not that long, have I? I've known you about a year, Martin, and what I've seen of you is that you've got a gentle heart, gentle soul, and I feel that comes from like good women in your life, I think.
Yeah, I've got a lot of good women in my life. I'm very blessed to have them all. They look after me.
Yeah. The eldest.
Yeah.
So we're talking about your life. We're just getting you out of uni. So again, you had this, I suppose, drive and focus. I'm going to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
Was that within still just going? I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And did you have doubters like with people going? Like, it must have been at some points in your life.
No, I think once I got to Sheffield University, I was pretty sure I was going to achieve the dream I had from many years ago.
Yeah. And your mum thought, yeah, he's definitely going to do this.
Yeah. I was pretty sure I was going to get there.
Yeah, yeah. So you finished the uni. You got a 2-1.
Yeah, I got a 2-1.
That was a good guess, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then you go on, what happened next?
Yeah, well, once you finish university, you have to do further exams, which take a year, did those, and then you do a 2-year training contract, which I did with a local Sheffield firm called Russell and Creswick, which was my first place to work.
Yeah.
And I qualified as a solicitor there in 1985, which was just amazing.
What kind of soliciting?
And I did a bit mixture of everything, really. They were a small firm, so did some property, did some criminal work.
Right.
Did some company work. So it was a broad mixture of
whatever came through the door.
Yeah, exactly. We were a small firm, typical high street Sheffield firm.
Yeah. Are they still going on?
No, Russell and Creswick merged with another firm many years later, just shortly after I left in 2000.
Okay, so you were there for a long
time.
I was there
for 15 years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Became a lawyer, became a partner, which, you know, I was very proud of. And then in 2000, I got an opportunity to go and work for Nabarro.
Yeah, yeah.
They were a UK firm with a Sheffield office.
Yeah.
And really my legal career changed then, you know, I was going to a much bigger...
But going back to the first one, I mean, I don't know much about the legal world, but does it feel like you're quite young to become a partner, or was it quite quick to become a partner or not?
No, I think the opportunity was there, and I suppose becoming a partner was about demonstrating your value to the business and working hard and...
And bringing income in.
Absolutely, bringing clients in, bringing business in, and I suppose the other thing about partnership is just being able to work with other people in the business and...
Yeah.
Becoming a partner, really, and in what that means in terms of working together.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, by that stage, I had fulfilled my... Yeah. And, you know, Sheffield, wow, how good has Sheffield been to me? I mean, I've been so lucky.
So during that period, you presume you met your wife as well while you were still working there, yeah?
Met Juliet in, I think, about 1989.
Okay-ish.
And we got married in 1993.
I'm not going to tell you off if you get the year young.
I think I've got the year right.
That's good. And you got married in 93. You're certain about that?
Yeah, we got married in St. Mary's Cathedral in the centre of Sheffield, which was a lovely day. Everybody came from Ireland. And,
fantastic.
We had a lovely time and, nice memories.
And what part of Sheffield is your wife from?
Sorry. Juliet is from... She was born in Fulwood and then... Her mum and dad moved to 20 Well Lane, and she was living at 20 Well Lane whenever I met her.
Okay, yeah. So where did you meet? How did you meet?
I met her through a sort of a friend of a friend, and I think I kind of let it be known that I thought Juliet was nice, and everything moved from there. There were people sort of, you know, making sure that we would get together at some point, which... All worked out pretty well. So
that's done, isn't it? Yeah. Many years later, still there. And
she's children. Juliet's been amazing. She's been wonderful for me. There's no doubt about that.
Well, let's crack on. Well, let's go for your next song choice there, Martin. So you've gone for The Fields of Effenrye. Yeah. Why this one?
I just think if you're Irish and you're living away from home, it's become kind of the anthem of a generation.
Yeah.
I think back to... Just listening to that song way many, many years ago and how it kind of permeates all aspects of Irish life, really.
It is.
Whether you're watching football or rugby, whatever it's at. Everybody's singing it.
It's a great song. Well, this is a live version, so let's get it along with it.
Alone prison wall, I heard a young girl calling, Michael, they have taken you away, for you stole Trevelyan's car, so the young might see the mark. Now a prison ship lies waiting day. Lord, I the feet of battle cry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing, we had dreams and songs to sing. So lonely round the fields of Athlone Rye, by a lonely prison wall, I heard a young man calling. Nothing matters, Mary, when you're free. Against the famine and the crown, I rebel, they cut me down. Now you must raise our child with dignity. On your own now, give it a lash, here we go. Harbor wall, she watched the last star falling as the prison ship sailed out against the sky. For she lived in hope and pray for her love in Botany Bay. It's so lonely round the fields of Athlone Rye. Let's hear it now. Lord, I the fields of Athlone Rye, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing, we had dreamed songs to sing. It's so lonely round the field. One more last time, let's hear it now.
The fields of Athlone Rye, can't beat it. Yes, and Martin, my guest, has just admitted to me that he's a singer, and he's been singing over the years in the Dog and Partridge. So next time, well, we could have had you singing that singing live on the radio. Do you think, Martin?
Have I really said that?
Yeah. sorry. So no, it's great, isn't it? I mean, you can't beat a sing song, can you?
No, you can't. Bit of sing along and be happy.
You'd be happy. Yeah. You have to be. Yeah, we're running out of time, Martin. So I feel like we're not going to get the rest of your life in, are we? In 10 minutes, it's going to be a challenge. But what go on, picking out the significant things, I suppose the move to Nibiru and then you did well there again.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about your life in the bar? Or
yeah, I'm very lucky at Nabarro. You know, worked for a national law firm with the Sheffield office. Worked on some really interesting projects. I became a litigator, so I did quite a lot of court work, arbitration. Became a mediator, did a lot of alternative dispute resolution. Worked on things like Wembley Stadium. We acted for the contractor who built that. Did a lot of energy projects.
Because it was that controversial, wasn't it? Because they kept overspending.
Wembley was the subject of lots of lawyers and court
was delayed
actions.
So,
a very lucky career. Worked with some wonderful clients. Worked with some really good lawyers. Learned a lot. Very, very lucky. You know, I look back on that time leading up to my retirement and 6 years ago, I suppose how much I'd packed in such, you know, the period of time.
And you were involved in that big merger then? So, because I remember, what was the law firm that was down at down near the canal that you merged with, didn't you?
They were, in 2017, Nabarro merged with two London firms, Cameron McKenna and Allswang.
Yeah.
And we became a really big global firm. You know, we had about 90 offices in about 120 countries.
Yeah.
So we were a big...
So you say like the sixth largest in the world?
Yeah,
or
we were about the sixth biggest law firm in the world at that point.
And that you were still there then?
Yeah, I was still there,
involved in a partner.
Yeah, I was a partner there. So that was exciting and, you know, great today to see CMS still in Sheffield and employing lots of young lawyers and, you know, keeping the business going.
So that's what Nabarro became, CMS?
Nabarro then became CMS after the merger.
That's right, Oh, good. So, yeah, I mean, and you couldn't really get, I suppose, much higher being a solicitor then. Is it barristan? Is that...
Barrister's the other side of the legal profession.
I'm showing my ignorance there, can't you?
You've got two sides, really. You're either a solicitor or you're a barrister.
So you got pretty much as high as you could be a solicitor.
I became a partner, and you know, it was I felt that was a real achievement in many ways. You know, I go back to where I started with you about 40 minutes ago in Armagh, thinking I want to be a lawyer, and Sheffield enabled me to fulfill that dream, so you know, a lot to be thankful for. And
I'm just saying, because I suppose, I mean, say no lawyers in your family before or anything, was there? So it's just, I mean, I suppose a lot of people you work with would have had that, you know, lawyer families,
I was the first one and first person in my family to go to university too, so you know, very grateful for that opportunity.
Amazing achievements, And then, but then you, what made you decide to retire?
6 years ago, I just thought, you know, got one life, might as well try and pack as much in as we can. And I just wanted to do something else.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the other side of life, not being a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I got an opportunity to join AAS Seal, you know, a company that you and I know quite a lot about, and based in Rotherham. And
just going back a sec, because what I've learned over the last 50 minutes is that you never really had that break. So you had that drive to become a lawyer, and you went straight from college to you know, like to uni to to work, and like non-stop for 40 years or whatever, and so I can imagine you going right, that's enough now. So you said that,
I never saw retiring as being, you know, sitting at home doing nothing. That would probably put Juliet mad, I think. So I kind of had to find a reason to go and do something else.
So you retired, but then you'd say, so the role at AE Sale, which for people who don't know is a huge, another huge manufacturing,
that's right, manufacturing
firm
company,
based in Rotherham, mostly, and you were,
non-exec director there,
So you, how many kind of days do you do there? Like, is it?
Yeah, it's flexible. I do one day, maybe 2 days. It's whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, it's as flexible as that.
That's
and,
nice.
And wonderful business with, you know, not just a great company in terms of its global reach and what it does, but also huge values in terms of community, helping people, getting young people into work, working with kids in schools, working in communities across South Yorkshire where maybe people struggle in some cases, and trying to help and support them.
Yeah.
So we feel very, very lucky to have an opportunity to be part of that, albeit very much on the fringes of, you know, how the business operates.
Yeah, and that's... Would you take it on a non-exec director to kind of bring that side of things to the company?
Yeah.
And that's, I think you were telling me earlier, really, that's where you're at now and what you've done, I suppose, since retirement, and probably throughout your life before, but wanting to give something back to the community.
Very much so. I think my retirement from the legal profession was very much around that. I feel very passionately about giving something back to a place that's been very good to me. And that influences a lot of the community, voluntary, charity work that I now do. And that also has enabled me to meet some amazing people, doing amazing work in communities, volunteering, helping people. And, I think that's something in South Yorkshire we should be really proud of, and, you know, we should celebrate.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of good things happening.
So just to, I mean, the list of things you do is, it makes me tired looking at it. How many boards roughly do you sit on?
Yeah, I sit on a few boards, but I never measure it.
Voluntary, and this is all voluntary.
This all voluntary. I mean, I try to help where I can, and I also try to bring my skill set to a place where I think I can add some value, and if that helps people and helps communities, then hey, isn't it?
Being modest, though, were you a charity trustee, St Luke's, great hospice.
Yeah,
so, I mean, and that's
very lucky.
For charities to have, you know, a lawyer on board is massive.
Very lucky to be associated with St Luke's, Werlow Hall Farm. I've had the privilege recently of working with the Sheffield Poverty Truth Commission, which has been an amazing experience. And now doing some work with the Jobs Foundation, you know, helping to get young people into work, get people who are on benefits into work, and just trying to create some good in society, recognising that, you know, if we all work together, we can create opportunities for people.
Yeah, which is not easy, is it? I'm sure you've come across barriers as well.
There's lots of challenges, but I think we've got to keep positive. And I always think if there's, out of every difficulty or challenge, there's always an opportunity.
You've
just got to be positive about things and help each other and work together. And I think that's a good spirit in South Yorkshire, Sheffield, you know, people want to help each other. And I think if we keep doing that, we'll be okay.
Good, good. Yeah. We're coming towards the end. We've only got a few minutes left. I can't decide whether to play your last song or keep chatting. I think we're going to keep chatting. Let's keep chatting. We're going to do Bridge Over Troubled Waters, which is a beautiful song as well. But you'll just have to listen to that to yourselves, listeners, because we're just going to keep chatting about singing. So I'm interested in lots of things. I suppose what one of the things you did was being a high sheriff. Tell us about what that involved and how you got to be that and what it meant.
Yeah, I was approached if I'd be High Sheriff of South Yorkshire in 2021-22. Wonderful year of, working with community groups, community organisations, just using the office to really convene, bring people together.
If you explain what it is, a High Sheriff?
There's been High Sheriffs for 1,000 years. Every county in England has a High Sheriff. And the role is a ceremonial role. You know, there's an aspect where you work with the judiciary and with the police, but there's also a huge opportunity to, you know, use the Shrieville office in a community sense where you help community organisations, help charities, bring people together, maybe try and raise some money for good causes. So, yeah, hugely lucky and felt very honoured to be to be asked to do it.
Because you're part of that, they call it the chain gang, don't they?
I think they do, actually, yeah, yeah.
Well, there's people who wear chains, basically.
Right.
But you get invited to so many events that make you part of that community.
You also recognise, I think, that it's not the individual that's important here, it's the office itself, and it's what that chain means and what it symbolises.
Yeah.
And for me, it was a real opportunity of, you know, as I say, working with communities, bringing people together, and just having that opportunity to do that was something very special and something I'll probably not forget really for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about the future, Martin? What do you see happening in the future for you?
Future, looking forward to the All-Ireland Gaelic football and hurling finals in July. I'll be heading back to Dublin for those, which will be nice.
Okay, what's your team?
Well, being from Fermanagh,
there is no team,
we don't really win anything.
Tyrone?
Armagh are doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Donegal, Kerry.
Yeah.
Go to the hurling final in July also, and
very good.
Going back to Fermanagh again shortly to see my mother and my sisters and my brother, which will be nice. So, yeah, fantastic. Lots to look forward to.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, you're a lovely man, Martin. I knew you would be. It's been a great, great hour. And time's beating us to get all your song choices.
Lovely to be with you.
But no, thanks, everyone. And next week, we'll be back again with another guest here on Sheffield Live, Deserted Island Discs. Thanks, everyone. Have a lovely evening. Thanks, Martin.
Thanks, Ben.